It was like one of those experiences where it's out of a movie, and I left and I was like, what the hell has just happened?
What has this happened?
Melanin and Me, exploring the Black woman's experiences in Britain. Hey, lovely ladies, welcome back to Melanin and Me. Before we dive into today's episode, we want to remind you how you can stay up to date with our latest content. We release episodes every other Thursday, so make sure to subscribe to Melanin and Me on your preferred podcast platform so that you don't miss out on any episodes. You can also follow our inspiring content on social media by searching Melanin underscore and underscore me on Instagram, or find us on Facebook at Melanin and Me UK. If you felt empowered or motivated from any of our episodes, we love to hear it, so feel free to contact us by emailing melaninandme@yahoo.com or slide on in the DMs on our social accounts. Don't forget to share some love, drop us a review, and share with any of your fellow queens who might be uplifted by tuning into Melanin and Me. For now, enjoy today's episode. Welcome back to another episode of Melanin and Me. And today we have the wonderful Jess Jones with us. She is a motivational comedian and award-winning blogger. She's also an author of the book Own It, and she's referred to on Instagram as the fat funny one. Jess, welcome to Melanin and Me.
Hello, thank you for having me.
Thank you for coming. Ooh. I'm so excited to hear about everything you're going on about in your book. And I'm also intrigued, where's your nickname come from, the fat funny one?
Oh my God, everyone asks me this. So when I started my blog, I wanted to write something funny. Sorry, if you can hear all the drama in the background. Mama four here. Just going to roll with it. So I wanted to do something a bit funny, and I kept writing down words that I would use to describe myself. And literally, I was like fat, funny, like comedy, you know, just trying to write things down. And then I went with the funny fat one, but it just didn't sound right. Mm. And then I went with the fat funny one, and then it just stuck. And now it's out there and people find it so awkward, which is hilarious. They find it really awkward, like if they meet me in real life and they're like, excuse me, are you like the funny one? Like they say it like it's so bad, which
if they're cursing you or something, like,
yeah. And then I find it really funny to be like, no, sorry, what did you say? And then they're like, oh my gosh, I'm so sorry. I'm like, no, it's me, it's fine. But yeah, so that's where it came from. I just wanted to reclaim the word fat, particularly, because it was so negative for me. And actually, I just thought, well, there's nothing wrong with that word. It's just another descriptor, like funny or fabulous or whatever. So I just
back. Love that.
I love that, because society's just got us into this little box where we've got the negative connotation associated with that word, whereas, no, as you've said, it's just another descriptor and we should own it and really celebrate that.
I think before we dive in to talk about the book, and obviously that's linked to kind of your, you know, some of the stuff that's in Own It, Jess, just tell us a little bit about yourself and tell us like what inspired you to write the book, and, you know, give listeners a little bit about what it's about, but without giving too much away, because we want them to go away and buy it and then they're gonna read it.
So I'm a mum of four. I've got four beautiful children who drive me absolutely insane, and I've got a dog and two cats and a husband, so my house is chaos. My life is chaos.
I love that the husband came last after the animals. I love that.
Everyone else, yeah, he's the only one who could do stuff for himself. I have to name everybody else who I have to do everything for. But yeah, our house is chaotic. My life is mad. I've worked in recruitment for over a decade. My whole career has been around people. And at the minute, I specialise in diversity and inclusion training. So I do loads of stuff that's all around people and around making businesses work. And confidence kind of became part of that. And then on the sidelines, I was the fat funny one online. I just talked about my own personal journey about learning to love myself and find out who I was, and shared that journey online, and it's all kind of merged into one now. It was used to be really separate. I used to be mum over here, career person over here, fat funny one over here, and now they're all kind of one of the same, which is really amazing. So I can kind of put them all together, and yeah, that's who I am and what I do. And then I guess the book, I always wanted to write a book. I never knew what I was going to write about, but I just wanted to write a book. And a few years ago, I think it's 2018, 2019, I wrote on a post-it note. I went to an event and they took Polaroids and you had to write like something you wanted to do. And I was like, I'm going to write a book. And then I wrote a post-it note next to it on my vision board and it said, the girl who owned it, and roll forward to 2021. And I got a book deal and the publisher was like, oh, we always think you're someone who owns it. And I was like, that's what it says on my post-it note.
Wow.
And lo and behold, now we're here. And the book is just about self-love. It's about confidence building, how to build that confidence, a lot about self-acceptance and embracing the body that you're in. And that all of those things, that the abundance and the joy and the greatness that you want in life can be obtained now. There's no when. It's not going to come when you lose weight or when all these things happen or when you get the job or when you find the man or when you find whatever. It can happen now and it's obtainable now. And that's ultimately what it's about.
Like, people often talk about that, don't they? Like happiness is, it's not a destination. Do you know what I mean?
The journey.
Enjoy the journey, enjoy the ride. And, you know, like it's not about, because we all know, don't we? We set those markers, like let's use weight, for example. Like if people are trying to, I'll be more comfortable when I'm this, you know, I've lost a stone or whatever. Yeah. But as soon as you get to that point, then there's another goal, then there's another thing.
It's always, people always think target, like your weight when you get to target is going to be when you like suddenly unlock this joy or these all these opportunities and stuff. And it just doesn't happen like that. And my social media all started as a weight loss account. Like it was a weight loss diary is how I started years ago. And I was big in the like diet industry online, like talking about it, sharing how much I'd weighed and all the drama and all this, like, you know, when you didn't lose a pound. And I saw all these amazing, incredible women get to target weight and then still weren't happy. I was like, what? Yeah. They're like, but I'm just going to go for like 3 more pounds. Or there was never an end to it.
Yeah.
And I just kept thinking, but all the things that you want in life are totally obtainable now. Like, why are we waiting for this moment where we get to this goal? Like, it doesn't, none of it makes sense to me anymore. And I realized just how toxic that diet industry and that diet culture is. And it's essentially feeding off the fact that we feel insecure constantly. And that feeds into everything we do, our careers, our love lives, our home lives. If you don't feel good in yourself, it feeds into everything. And I wanted to make a change for myself and then now hopefully share that with other people.
Ah, you're definitely doing that. You're definitely sharing it and we're definitely receiving it really well. So keep up the amazing work that you started and I'm sure it's not the end. We're looking forward to part two of Own It. I'm not quite sure what it's going to be called yet.
Own It the sequel. We'll think of something.
As the book is focused around body confidence, why do you think this is so important and what role do you feel society plays on Black women and women of colour struggling with their body confidence? We just wanted to delve a little bit more
into it's
that.
A hard one. It's a hard one. I think for so many reasons. So personally, I'm mixed, so my mum's Jamaican, my dad's white British. So I'm very white person. I've got blonde hair and blue eyes, but I was only brought up by my Black Jamaican mother. And as a child, people never thought she was my mum. And I never had any sense of them belonging or understanding of why I was different, which already kind of unconsciously gave me issues around what I looked like because I didn't look like my mum. And then people, I do, which is weird because actually I do look like my mum, but on the surface I don't because people look at us and we're two different colours. So according to them, we look different. And actually we've got pretty much the same features. But people really gave me issues around my sense of belonging and my body and what was wrong. Why didn't I look like everyone else in my family? Because I didn't know the white side of my family until only a few years ago. So it was a massive issue for me. And now as an adult and looking back and witnessing what I see in the media and with my own family, particularly for Black women, the bodies we were told were wrong for years and years, mocked. And now suddenly they're overly sexualized or, you know, it's something that other people can have and it looks okay if it's on a woman of a different skin tone. So that all of that underlying creates huge issues for Black women and women of color around their bodies and what they look like and accepting that for yourself and going on a journey for yourself. And I think it's really difficult for people to then accept and love themselves who they are when you're constantly questioned or told that you're not good enough. And it's such a journey, and I've seen it more and more and more, and I think the media plays a massive part in that, because ultimately that's what we absorb the most. Whether we know it or like it or not, that's just where we see and what we see. So even as a kid, like when you think about all the TV programs we watched and stuff, everything was, but particularly what they defined as beautiful was always white women, which was a really conflicting thing for me when I've got very fair skin and blue eyes and blonde hair, but then I've got a wider nose and fuller lips and a curvier body. And so it was really difficult for me to really understand where I fit. And then also looking at my mother, who I couldn't then see on the media. I never saw women that looked like my mum. So how do you navigate that as a child? And so I think it's a massive issue about what we see, how we see it, and how women of colour, particularly in Black women, are depicted online, in movies, in films, and the message that that gives to children from a younger age all the way through to our adulthood.
And I think, you know, like the representation bit is so, it is, it's massive. And I think, like, you know, you've hit the nail on the head with, obviously I've come from a mixed background as well, and I think, you know, there's always, there's a lot of like identity challenges that comes with being of mixed race heritage. You know, you've got, you're not only kind of, you're seeing that, like you say, the media portrays what is beautiful as, you know, the white woman, the skinny white woman who's got particular color hair and eyes, and, you know, and you don't associate that, but you also then don't associate, there's not necessarily a clear cut, you know, box that you fit in, which is what makes it, you know, unique, beautiful, but it can be hard, particularly growing up. And I think women, we have, you know, we don't have it easy. Let's take, we're talking about race here, but we're also talking about weight, but also, you know, there's things like our body fluctuates so much. You've got your four beautiful children, and I'm sure that that also has played a part in kind of how your body's changed over years. And, you know, there's a lot of different factors that play a part. It's not just a linear time frame that you're like, oh well, you know, I'm always going to look like this. It's like, no,
even over a course of a month, when you have your monthly cycle, your body changes. It's constant, like every little thing is constant, and your body changes. And then when it changes, just when you get to a point where you think, yeah, right, something happens or something different happens, or it changes again. And everything from our hair, what your hair looks like, down to what your body shape is, all of those things play a part in how you feel about yourself and what you see. I had my hair relaxed since I was probably about 7 or 8 until I've not relaxed it now for over a decade, but for years that's how my hair was, because it was straight, because straight was presentable and straight was neat. So even down to things like your hair can play a part in how you perceive what is beautiful, what is presentable, and then how you then feel about yourself when you don't live up to that.
Yeah, but going back on that, again, it's systematic, isn't it? So it's the systems that we've got in place and all the different institutions that tell us, no, you can't be this way. You can only be this certain way, and this is the only way that you need to be. I mean, I find it so mind-blowing up until literally, what, the last year and a half, 2 years? Like, people who are hairdressers can now they have to do a course which incorporates like Afro-Caribbean hair. Whereas prior to that, it's almost like we weren't even considered, like, oh, they'll do their own thing and everybody else, this is what we're going to do as a community. So,
I've been to some loads of hairdressers where I've walked in and they're like, oh, we can't do your hair. And I've
And even just for a trim. Do you know how many people have been cut my hair?
Scared,
I'm like,
so scared.
What?
So scared.
Don't know what to do with this.
You
know what? I've got a funny story. So I went to Turkey for a holiday, and I don't know why, but I was like, I want to get my hair done. So I walk into this like salon, sit down. Before I know it, I've got 3 men around my headpiece, like all pulling and tugging in different directions. Honestly, it was so mind-blowing. It was like one of those experiences where it's out of a movie. And I left and I was like, what the hell just happened?
What has this happened?
It literally, the first guy came in, he was like, called over his mate, and he was like, they both just like looked at it, like no idea what to do. And then this third guy came, it was mental.
I love
that. They just don't know, do they? Like, it's one or the other. I went to I guess, traditional white salon that dealt with European hair and they didn't know what to do. Or I'd go to a black hairdresser. My mum took me and I'd just sit there and everyone would look at me. I'd be sat there in a chair with like, and I'd be there for like 8 hours on a Saturday. Yeah. waiting to get my hair done, and then even then I couldn't identify it being in there because I was so fair and I looked so different from everyone in the hairdressers, but my hair didn't depict that, so I never it was so confusing, and all of those things placed, and I talk about it in the book slightly about not knowing where I belong and that playing a massive part in how we feel about ourselves, and actually not realizing that until later into my adulthood how much some of those messages when you're young feed into how you feel about yourself when you're an adult.
They really do. And I think, you know, it sounds as though, I mean, definitely from a hair perspective, we've been through similar journeys, because, you know, I'm exactly the same, like relaxed ever since I was, I think it was 9, and, you know, had that until probably the last, I want to say about 5 years. And I remember like the first time I had it cut, so I cut the end of the relaxer out and I saw the actual hair curl, and I'd like, Ray knows because she's been on this journey with me, like, you know, I was teaching myself how to style my hair through YouTube, mm-hmm. and I was like, oh my God, like all of this like exploration was, it was just mind blowing. But I think it certainly helped that things like, let's take Vogue, for instance, I was in Tesco earlier picking something up and I look and I was so taken aback, because more and more and more we're seeing these beautiful dark skinned girls on the front of these Vogue magazines. You know, we're seeing, and it has to be a variety, because we, you know, we always talk about BAME as a category. We know it's so much bigger than that. There's so many players. Mm-hmm. And like, I never forget, there was a show, TV show about, from, they interviewed school kids and they're trying to get people to understand like from a girl's perspective. So there was like, they put the ethnic minority girls in one room and kind of separated them out, and it was a bigger study, but the point being, they went and they were talking about the magazines in the shop, and you know, the girls who were from Asian descent kind of sent themselves away, and they were like, we're in this but we're not, because we're not all the same, like, you know, yes, we need to see people like us. And I think it's just, you know, there's so many layers to it, but I think, you know, just on your point about, you know, what you said, Ray, it's the systems, and it is starting to change, but there's a lot of work to be done, I think. So.
Oh, 100%.
We've got 100%. So much work to do,
So, Jess, bullying myself skinny. You reference this in the book. Tell us about it. What does this mean?
So, one of the things I learned was that you can't hate yourself slim. Like, one of the things that I did was, like, just basically tell myself all the awful, horrible, negative things that you tell yourself in order to stop myself from eating. Like, I remember once I put a picture of myself that I didn't like on the fridge so I wouldn't go and eat food. Like, I look back now and I realise just how, like, that's literally insanity. Like, who does that? But that was really normal in diet culture. Like, they encouraged it, didn't they? You read magazines, oh, to stop yourself eating and, like, eating what you don't want to eat, or to stick to your diet, stick a picture of yourself on the fridge, or, you know, lock this away, or I did so many extreme things. And I essentially bullied myself into trying to make myself physically smaller in the hope that once I made myself physically smaller, all of these great things would happen. And it just didn't work like that. Like, it just didn't work like that at all. I really struggled. And I also reference now in the book, and what I've learned is about some of the things that we say to ourselves, you just wouldn't dream of saying to someone else. Yeah. And now I always think to myself, if I'm going to say something horrible to myself, would I say it to one of my kids? And if I reflect back on some of the things I said to myself, particularly around weight and like what I used to do and say, like, I'd say things like, before a night out, like, don't eat all day. Like, I remember once I took like loads of laxatives to try and get rid of my bloat so I could like wear this bodycon dress. And I even look back now, I wasn't even big. That's the worst thing. Like, but in my head, and that to me also proves that a lot of it is in your mind in terms of how you perceive yourself. Because I look back at pictures and I'm like, sorry, what? I thought I was what? I thought I looked bad here, and I didn't at all. And I now say to myself, would I say this to my child? And I can't imagine if my child ever came up to me, my eldest daughter, and said, "Mummy, I don't want to wear this because it doesn't look right, or I feel a bit bloated or feel a bit fat. I couldn't imagine saying to her, well, yeah, you are, you shouldn't wear that, that's not for you, that's for someone else. Mm-hmm. Maybe you should take some laxatives and get rid of it. Can you imagine having that conversation? You just wouldn't. Mm-hmm. Not with your friend, not with your child, not with someone you care about. Yeah. But those conversations with yourself are completely normal. Mm-hmm. Like those, and whether it's about weight, whether it's about life, career, like if your best friend came to you and said, I want to go for a promotion at work, can you imagine saying to her, nah, you really shouldn't, because I just don't think you've got the skills.
You ain't that girl, hon.
You're gonna look stupid, you're gonna embarrass yourself, like, don't do it. You know Sheila over there is probably gonna get it, so why would you even embarrass yourself? Like, don't do it. Like, can you imagine saying that? You just never would. But you would absolutely have that internal dialogue with yourself. Mm-hmm. And I bullied myself. I was bullied in certain parts of my life, particularly at work, not at school. But I realized that the biggest bully of all was me to myself. Mm-hmm. I was the worst person for myself. And it's now that I really realize the impact that that has when you start to say some of that internal dialogue out loud. And potentially say it to someone else, you just realize how much you just wouldn't.
But it's not like a practice tool. It's not like something we're taught at school, is it, about, you know, how to speak kindly to yourself, how to speak kindly to other people, you know, like,
I mean, always to others.
Yeah, like, I'm a big person for when I'm out and about, if I see somebody I don't know them in the toilets, they've got really nice nails, or they're wearing a nice dress, like, do you know what, love your dress, like, all
oh my around. Gosh, I love those dresses and toilets, they're the best, you make like the best friends.
Exactly. Like, come out, you go in, strangers come out besties for life, like, but it's not like it's almost like before I would say something like that and compliment whoever it is, I'd always think twice, because I'm like, is this person gonna think that I'm really bizarre, like, it's not a normal So, but that's mad, like, what, we're not, that's, why is that not normal? And I guess, you know, like you're saying, it's not normal for us to do that to other people, and like, that's why a lot of people find it hard to take a compliment, because it's not a muscle that's flexed regularly enough as it should be. And likewise for us, then internally it's like, well, hang on, how do I talk positively to myself, so I think that's where affirmation and all of that stuff plays such a big part. Oh, but you have to be purposeful about it, right?
Absolutely. And at the end of each chapter in the book, there's a challenge or an activity or something that I ask people to do, because it's all good about saying or thinking a lot of these things or reading a lot of information that's really positive, but it all takes action. Like, you have to do something about it, and you have to start to believe it. And so I wanted to write a book that wasn't really just like an autobiography about this is what I did, but actually then go, right, so this is what you need to do, actually do, take action to actually change your mindset, otherwise it's not going to happen. And that wasn't easy, because some of the tasks are quite deep. Like, you've got to really reflect on yourself. It's called own it, but owning it isn't just like, I think the initial reaction is, oh, own it, be fabulous, yeah, I'm owning it. But actually, there's part of it that means owning the parts of you that you don't like, the parts of you that are quite dark, the parts of you that you're uncomfortable with, the parts of you that aren't so positive that you need to learn to love or dig deep and do some healing around. And that isn't easy at all, but it's part of the journey. And until you acknowledge and accept all of those parts, it doesn't all come together. And that's what I want people to truly understand. There's an action you have to take. So like affirmations, that's an action to take. That's something you can physically do to really start to believe that for yourself. And I think that's so important, that positive chat to yourself. And it, like you said, we're taught to love and care and treat everyone else with kindness and respect, but never for ourselves. Like, the Bible says, love your neighbor as you love yourself. How are you going to love anyone if you don't love yourself first? Like, but we're supposed to love my neighbor. How can I love? And even when they've done you wrong, you're supposed to love them, but we don't show ourselves the same grace. So we're taught constantly, show grace, forgive others, but we don't do any of that for ourselves. We make a mistake and we beat ourselves up about it for years sometimes. I replay conversations I've had in my head like months ago, and I think, why did I say that? Like, we do it to ourselves, don't we? We berate ourselves or don't forgive ourselves or don't show ourselves any grace, but we're expected to do that to other people constantly. And it's impossible until you really and truly do it to yourself first, and then you can start projecting that to other people.
Me and Ash are like Yeah, because I feel like this is like something that we've had to do recently, where you step back and you literally look at the ugly, at the dark, and you really do reflect on that. So I can definitely resonate with that element. I know we've briefly spoken about all the little different activities that you've got at the end of each chapter, about how the readers of the book can then implement something in place. Can you just speak to us about the other sort of like exercises people can do to practically achieve their self-love?
I think one of the first things is accepting the position that you're currently in. I think that's always a good start. The biggest things I'm probably an advocate for is writing things down. So whether that's journaling or just writing notes, I think when you really put it to paper, you can really see it for what it is. And that includes the things that aren't so nice, because sometimes I've had a negative thought and when I've written it down, I'm shocked that that's what I thought, but it didn't really seem real until I've written it down and then re-looked at it.
Makes it tangible.
And I think that's what people need to do. And however you do that, whether you draw, whether you write words, whether you type it out, but I think sometimes getting it down and out of your head is a massive, massive thing, whether it's positive or negative. I think that's what you need to do. And that's always a good place to start. And actually a lot of the tasks when I look back are probably written. Like there's one about writing a letter to yourself, there's another about writing affirmations. So there is a lot of writing. And I think part of that is really about making it real, so you can start to deal with it, because until you make it real for yourself, you can't be accountable for it. And if you're not accountable for it, you don't feel like you can make a change, you don't feel like it's in your control. So I definitely think writing things down for me is probably the biggest thing or starting point at any point in your journey.
Yeah, definitely. And I think one of the biggest things that I know my, I guess, New Year's resolution to myself was about gratitude and practicing gratitude daily. So there'll be times where, you know, like before I go to bed or when I wake up, like I'll tell myself, you know, even if it's usually I go for three things I'm grateful for that day. But the difference in writing it down, because when you see that on paper, you know, you can flick back through it in the week, let's say. And if you put down three things per day, that's a lot of stuff. You know, you can look at and be like, actually, when things feel a bit tough, hang on a second. I've got a roof over my head. I've really appreciated this conversation with a friend. You know, like it really allows you to reflect and take yourself out of your body to be like, it's not just in here. I've got it out. I've spoken it into the atmosphere. It's out there. So yeah, I'm a massive advocate for getting stuff down on paper. It's a bit old school. You can still do it on your notes, you know, on your phone.
That's the same. I know, it's so old school. I have so many journals and notebooks. It's like, I'm like the worst. I always say I'm a stationery whore. Like, I literally I love it all.
Get me into paper chase any day.
Any day, that's like literally a dream for me. But also I think, like you said, it's about reflecting back. When you write things down, you can go back and look, and I think that's a massive part of your journey. Sometimes we don't see how far we've come because we can't see it. And when you write it down, you can go back and go, oh my gosh, was I feeling and thinking that back then, and now I'm in this position. And it's really hard to look back when you've got nothing to reference. I mean, you can think of stuff and remember stuff, but you can't always do that properly. Not in the same way. Yeah, not in the same way. Even little things like school reports, when you look back and you see how far you've come, until you've really got it in front of you and can read it and reflect, you can't see. And I think that's a massive encouraging part of your journey, when you can see there's change happening, because you can't recognise change all the time until you've reflected a little bit.
In the book, one of the things that you mentioned is being your own hype man. Have you mastered this yet, and how? And why is it important that you are your own hype man?
I have mastered it. And I think it's really important for a few reasons. One of the things, and I don't know if anyone's seen the film Cool Runnings, like it's one of my favorite films. So there's a bit in the film Cool Runnings where he says to Junior, like, I see pride, I see power. It's such a like cheesy but motivating speech, and I feel like we have to be that person for ourselves. And the reason why I think we have to be that person for ourselves is because there's not always someone else there. And even if there is, the loudest voice really is your own. And although sometimes we feel like everyone else's voice is louder, really it's the voice we tell ourselves. And I say this because when it's negative, if other people say, you know, oh, you're, but you look amazing, blah, 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 you look great, but you don't think you do, then mm-hmm. your voice is the one that you listen to. And so it has to work the other way around. When there are people saying not so negative, not so positive things to you, you have to be the loudest voice for yourself. And it's something about a hype man. Like, you've been to a garage rave or like a rap concert, there's always some hype man on stage just gassing everybody up. Like, that's, you need to do that for yourself. As corny as it is, it is so necessary. And I do it to myself all the time. Like, even today, it's publication day of my book, and I was like, oh my gosh, like, no one's gonna buy it. What am I gonna do? And then I was like, yes, man, someone's gonna buy it. Come on, man, just fix up. Like, what's wrong with you? And I had to do that for myself because my husband was at work, the kids were at school. There's no one there that's gonna do that for you all the time. And also, it's no one else's responsibility. And when we put that responsibility on other people, we're really disappointed when it doesn't happen or it doesn't come.
Well, Jess, look, first of all, just take it back a step. It's your publication day today.
Yeah.
Well, we do good hype men, so woo! so happy for you, because you need to celebrate those wins. Like, honestly, this is such a big day for you, honestly.
Yeah, I think it's really important to be that voice for yourself. And it's, and then it's a bonus when you get it from other people, which is really useful and lovely. But I think really taking, and again, I come back to accountability. It's your accountability. You're in control of it. And when you put that responsibility in other people, you set yourself up sometimes to be disappointed. Like, I can get really disappointed if no one is as excited about me as an opportunity for myself. Like, I should be that's the most excited about that. And so I think it's so important. And also, I just like the idea of a hype man, because when you go to concerts and raves, they're always the person that's like the most excited and the most fun, and I love that.
Can I just give a massive shout out to my hype man? Ash is the best hype man ever. Honestly, even like the tiny little wins that I have, and I'm like, Ash, guess what I did today? And she's like proper gassing me up, and I'm like, you just feel so good about it. But you're right, that needs to start within.
Because even if it's always a bonus when someone does it, but if Ash wasn't there for any reason, and I don't know, it's just before a big meeting or an interview, you couldn't get hold of her, you almost have to channel what she would say to you to yourself, so that you can do that for yourself. And then what other people do when they hype you up too is affirm the things that you already believe about yourself, rather than their thoughts being the ones that control everything.
Or maybe you can do me a script, Ash, in case one day you're not
Do you script that you've got to read in the mirror every morning? You know what? Yeah. Like, it's funny because it's like it's an easy thing to do when you're genuinely so like proud of somebody, and so like they're always doing things that you're in awe of. And like, I think when we set this podcast up, you know, we knew we were going to have guests on, and we've had so many different incredible women come on to talk to us about all the things they're doing. And it's so quick. You see how quick it is for people to slide by stuff, just like you did with your publication date, you know, like, and I think one of the things we always try and do is stop and pause and just be like, you know, we've had people on who've kind of been, oh, you know, like when I got my PhD, and we're like, hang on a second, you've done X, you know, own it literally. And you can see that, again, it's like, oh, actually, yeah, like, let me not just breeze past that. And we're such big advocates of women supporting women and stuff as well. That's what the pod's about. So
yeah, but we're taught to be humble. We're taught that being humble is a really positive trait to have. And I don't think we realise how much that impacts how we behave when we are successful or when we make achievements, because we're constantly told, and this isn't just for women, culturally as well, being humble is like, yes, be humble, good, that's it. And there's no, you know, don't get me wrong, we really celebrate each other and we're really good at that, but also there's this real push to be a humble person, that's a real commodity, that's something you should be and how you should act. And so then it makes us in moments like this go, oh yeah, it's my publication day, no big deal, or yeah, I got that, oh, no big deal, yeah, no, I don't want to fuss, I don't, but actually we should And particularly as women, supporting women, like throughout the whole process of my book, I asked them that any company they needed to work with, it had to be female owned. So everything from like they made cookies to go with my book, or the printers, or the design of the cover, all had to be female owned. It was my priority that any business that worked or collaborated with the book needed to be owned by a woman, because if that's my way of being part of that support and part of that change. And also I told them not to ask for no one to work for free. I was like, if you're getting a woman to work, she ain't not working for you for free. That's not happening. Because it was really important to me that people were paid for their time, and that was my way of being the hype man in a more practical sense. I don't want people to be, it's funny, isn't it? We don't want other people to be humble. We want to hype them, but then we're like, oh, it's no big deal.
Don't worry about it. Jess, I guess last kind of question before we wrap up, really. So we often ask this for people coming on, and I think this is a particularly pivotal question for you as well, given what we've spoken about. What advice would you give your 15-year-old self? If there's one piece of advice you would give to yourself?
Oh my gosh. Do you know what? I get asked this all the time, and I even wrote about it in the book, and I still can't think of an answer. I'll try to think what I wrote. I think the best piece of advice is we haven't got all the time in the world, so just do it now. Just go, go for it now. There's no, apart from boys, don't go for boys now, don't do any of that now. Let me be clear. But no, it's, I think one of the things we think is that we are somewhat entitled to a lot of time, and we're not always. And so it would be to go for that opportunity now. Like don't waste time, just go for it. There's nothing you can lose. There's only ever going to be a learning opportunity or a success or both. And so I would say just keep going, go for it now.
Lovely. Nice. Thank you very much. And lastly, but definitely not least, can you please give us 3 songs that you're currently listening at that get you in that mood where you're like, yes, I'm my own hype man, my confidence is good, I feel all good. What are those 3 songs?
What do I go for? So my always go-to song if I need to like hype myself or need some encouragement is Jill Scott Golden.
Oh yeah, we love a bit of Jill.
Yeah. She always, that song, when I did my show, like it was literally the song I played on repeat to like, I'm living my life like it's golden, I'm on it, life is good, I love it. So that song. There's also a soca song, I don't know who it's by, but it goes I'm gonna laugh now because I'm gonna try and sing it, but it always makes me laugh. It goes, drink water and mind your business.
That knows that one. I think that was on the playlist whenever we did that carnival shoot, Ash.
Probably. Yeah.
Got it. Because I just think like, about. It's such good advice.
Yeah. I'm going to look for
what
it.
What keeps
now,
me positive
actually.
Is to just like drink water and mind my business.
Yeah.
So that's probably another one. And then another one that's just getting me, it's just giving me vibes at the minute, and I love it, is Hours and Hours.
Hours and Hours.
Who sings it? Oh, I'm going to check now. Yeah, it's by, let's have a quick look. It's actually a bit of a slow jam, but I absolutely love it. It's by, is it Mooney Long? Hours and Hours.
Okay,
let's try that down as well.
Are you going to give us a preview of how the song goes?
Oh my gosh, no. It's like yours, mine, ours. I could do this for hours. That song.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
yes,
I know
yes,
that
yes,
song.
Yes, yes.
Oh, gosh, you look at me singing on this damn podcast. Who even am I right now?
Mooney Long.
Author, comedian, singer, blogger.
Sing, do you know what I mean?
What can't you do, Jess?
Let me just add it to the list.
Absolutely amazing. Thank you very much for joining us on Melanin and Me today. Please, can you do any plugs for any of your social medias? The book, when is it coming out? I know you said today is publication day. Where can the people get the book from?
So any major outlets, so WH Smith, Waterstones, Amazon, bookshop, online, anywhere, and in store. And then I'm just at the Fat Funny One everywhere. Like, TikTok, YouTube, Facebook, it's all the same. Instagram.
We'll make sure we put.
I just do bare foolishness on TikTok.
I love a gander. I love a look. I'll make sure.
Oh, I love it.
Socials on the footnote as well. Thank you very, very much for your time. I know time is precious with having four little ones and the two cats and the dog and the husband.
You've been so patient with my like crying kids and requests for headphones and my toddler cussing me because I stole her headphones and feeding them. You've been amazing. Thank you for having me.
So that's a wrap on today's episode. We hope you enjoyed it and that you gained something positive from listening in, whether that be you gained a new perspective, got some tips and tricks to motivate and inspire you, or it's just made you smile. Don't forget to like, share, subscribe, and leave a review so that you don't miss any upcoming episodes and so we can bring you more of the content that you love. Until next time, stay blessed, wear that crown with pride, and keep shining.